Ken Forrester, Executive Director at Momenta. Welcome to our Digital Thread podcast, produced by, for, and about digital industry leaders. In this series of conversations, we capture insights from the best and brightest minds in digital industry. They're executives, entrepreneurs, advisors, and other thought leaders. What they have in common is, like our team at Momenta, they are deep industry operators. We hope you find these podcasts informative. And as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Good day and welcome to Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. Today, I'm pleased to host Kimberly Eubank, Chief Digital Information Officer of Big Ass Fans. Named one of Global Telecom's Business's 50 Women to Watch, Kimberly is a strategic and operational executive experienced in tackling big initiatives and delivering results. She's an expert at breaking down complexity and moving the business forward in a more integrated, seamless manner. Her background includes established Fortune 150 companies, startup, and turnaround environments. In these roles, she served both business and consumer segments with a proven ability to build consensus and overcome obstacles to successfully drive high-profile, multi-million-dollar initiatives. Kimberly's achievements include spearheading day one readiness for the AT&T and Cingular merger, impacting over 46 million customers, driving transformation of Cingular's B2B infrastructure, and overseeing the migration to a unified identity and access management framework for over 100 million customers. She joined Big Ass Fans in early 2023 to help drive the digital transformation, assessing, preparing, and executing transformative change, ensuring they are clear, ready, and aligned. Kimberly holds a Bachelor of Science in Communications from the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, and an MBA from Kennesaw State University. Kimberly, welcome to our Digital Thread podcast.
Thank you, Ken. I'm so excited to be here and to discuss all things digital with you.
Excellent. And as well, I appreciate you taking the time to be part of this and coming, especially from the really interesting background that you have. And so hopefully we'll weave all of that into our discussion today. You know, we call this the Digital Thread Podcast. So I always like to start with a very open-ended question, and that is, what do you consider to be your digital thread?
I think that there's several things. I think in my career, clearly large-scale project management, which in and of itself isn't digital, but as my career evolved, digital evolved kind of along the same timeline and the same pathing. And so really the ability to manage large-scale programs that had a lot of different pieces and bringing them together into one. I think the other kind of thread in my career has been fixing complicated issues. I'm the person that they bring in to say, we have a Gordian knot that needs to be unraveled, or we have some big thing that we have to hit by this date, and the date is immovable. Figure out how to get us there. So tackling those complicated issues and being fortunate enough to have succeed at that to some degree has been a thread. And then I think the last one is really owning efforts that have a large change component to them. So whether that's a merger integration activity, like I did for day one readiness with the AT&T Cingular merger, or whether it's a more straight up digital transformation, we're doing things the 1980s way, we need to do it the post 2000 way. No matter what it is, it's kind of owning something that's going to bring change to the organization. So those I think are my three kind of pillars that are common throughout my career.
I had to appreciate your more straight out digital transformation. Is there such a thing? I have yet to see patterns apply.
Yeah, everyone is different. And I think that's why I like it, right? It's not cookie cutter. If you try to make it cookie cutter, you're probably not going to be successful.
Agreed. Fully agreed. At least that's what we've seen so far. So Let's go back to your time with AT&T, even before the famed merger with Cingular. I noted you were director of product development for emerging devices, of course, now IoT, in 2009. The telcos were, of course, some of the first to drive both machine-to-machine, or M2M, and then IoT initiatives. What were some of the key technologies and use cases you were exploring at the time?
Yeah, I mean, I like to say that I was IoT before IoT was IoT, right? We didn't even call it IoT back then. It was so early. So at that point, we knew that it was around machine-to-machine. We actually talked about M2M a lot, right? And so we didn't know what use cases were going to end up sticking and which ones weren't, and which ones were going to be profitable for us to be in and which ones weren't. So, I mean, we tried connected dog collars, photo frames, but the big M2M, the first one that I recall us do was utility meters. So starting to get in with the utility companies and so that they could take, you know, kind of readings remote and know where things were. Kindle was one of our first M2M so that they could do their whisper sync. And then ultimately, I think where that organization after I left it kind of landed was automobiles were a sweet spot. So working with car manufacturers and really connecting the cards for diagnostics and things like that, and that turned out to be one of the larger lines of business for the carriers. So seen a little bit of everything, dog collars to Teslas.
Well, and certainly some of those have really, well, in fact, they've all stuck, but clearly the automobile one, you know, remote telemetry, and Tesla has been probably the one to exercise that the greatest in terms of capabilities there. It's interesting to think of your automobile actually downloading a new firmware set to allow for some new feature like semi-autonomous driving, right? Who would have thought in the day? So
yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I have a fairly new Volvo and I literally have to like make time to upgrade my software and not go anywhere, just like you have to do on your computer. So, you know, times they keep a changing.
Yes, they do. And God forbid that at least hopefully you have a choice when it decides to update and how it decides to update, because sometimes my Mac decides on Apple's behalf that it's going to update now.
Yeah, the car, you do tell it, okay, I'm going to be around for 2 hours, so you can update now. I'm not going anywhere. But
there you go.
Let's hope you didn't have an emergency.
Yeah. So let's hit the famed AT&T and Cingular merger, affecting again some 46 million customers. What was your role and how did your time there really prepare you to be a digital business leader?
So I think this was kind of the beginning of that kind of me taking on transformational roles. So my job was that when you're in a merger or you're merging with a competitor for FCC injustice reasons and, you know, for trade reasons, you have to make sure that you're still continuing to act like competitors. And so you're limited on what information you can see from the other side. So it's very much kind of planning in the dark. And so my job was to lead the efforts to figure out how we were going to be ready within 30 days of merger closing to come out to our combined 46 million customers looking and feeling like one company, even though behind the scenes, we had still had two billing systems and two networks and two websites and two everything. But to the customers, it needed to look and feel like, oh, merger's done. We're one company. And I think that we actually went further on that I've seen other companies do. Other companies that merge, I've seen them, you know, take a couple years to change the brands on their stores. We did it overnight to make sure that every store, when you woke up, every store had the new logo on it. So that was my job, was to kind of figure out how we could fake it till we make it and make sure that we thought about all of the different customer transactions that they would want to do, you know, pay a bill, buy a phone, upgrade a device, do a return, and make sure that we knew how to handle that across all of our touch points, digital, company-owned retail stores, agent stores. But also there's a difference between handling that in a prior Cingular store versus handling that in a prior AT&T mobility store. So we had to deploy like the Cingular systems into the AT&T stores during that 30-day window. So it was a lot of moving parts, but very, very rewarding. And one of the things I looked back on so fondly about that is when you have your entire company really striving for the same goal and they understand, this is probably the most important, they understand why they're striving for that goal and what that achieving that goal means. There's just a synergy and a kind of an electric buzz in the workforce while that's going on. And so it was a very engaged time and a very rewarding time in hindsight that we all kind of look back on very fondly. And that really started my path of working on transformational type things. So once I'd worked on that was really focused on B2C, that went so well that they said, hey, why don't you go over and help the B2B side of the house figure that out because it took a little longer to do the B2B side. So I worked on that for a couple years. And then subsequently just kept getting those kind of projects over and over again until ultimately I left the company. And every role that I've had post AT&T has been to lead some sort of transformation in another company in another industry. So it just kind of became my sweet spot as a result.
Clearly, and clearly those lessons taught had good cross-industry applicability, because as you mentioned, when you left AT&T, you went to SunTrust. And it was interesting, SVP of Digital Efficiency, and this is back in 2017. So how did you define digital efficiency? What was your remit, and of what are you most proud?
Yeah, so with the SunTrust role, that was really owning the authenticated digital experience. And so the remit was really what most digital teams' remits are, which is trying to deflect contacts from the human branches or the contact center, right? Putting the ability for the customer in their device or on their computer to actually take care of transactions themselves without having to talk to a human being to do it. And so what we were really trying to do, that was efficiency. Could you get in and could you accomplish the task that you came here to do in a self-service type of manner? And so I think with that role, there was a lot of incremental changes. It wasn't like we threw the old app away and started completely over, right? Although some people wanted to do that. But, you know, it was solid. It just needed a lot of the bells and whistles added. So we spent a lot of time looking at what do other competitor apps do that are considered kind of best in class? What are the transactions that the customers are still calling into customer service for or still walking into a branch for? And then really tackling those kind of in priority order as far as, you know, this is where we can help the customer not have to go somewhere or do something. They can just take care of it on their phone. And so one of the things at the time was paperless billing, which by that time, most people were all in on paperless billing. This particular company wasn't at that point. And so it seemed so simple and not such a big thing, but just making paperless billing more of an opt-out versus an opt-in. And then also making sure that we had, I think it was up to 7 years of billing history or 3 years of billing history on the digital platform so that they didn't have to call in and request old billed copies and things like that. So it was simple things, you know, it wasn't anything huge, but it's the amalgamation of the whole that once you start tackling those individual little issues that cause friction in your customer experience, you start smoothing the friction. And so that was really what it was about, was trying to remove friction points and make the customers more self-sufficient and able to complete things in a more self-service manner.
Excellent. Well, you brought that customer experience focus to Cooper Lighting Solutions in 2020. So you oversaw their digital transformation efforts across their customer touch points. So synonymously, certainly with what you did at SunTrust, but you know, much more focused in terms of the electrical and appliance space. How did you organize your team and approach, and what were some of the results?
Yeah. So at Cooper, it's interesting that you chose to ask about organization with this role, because that's the one that probably had the most extensively defined organizational structure of all of my roles. And so there, we really took the customer journey, so the phases of the customer journey. And we said, okay, for each one of those phases of the customer journey, and I believe there were 7 or 8, we actually created a scrum team for each one of those phases of the customer journey. And they focused, the product manager and a product owner and the scrum team really focused on how can I make my part of the customer journey better for the customer? And then how can I hand off to the next phase of the journey as cleanly and as efficiently as I can? So that once you kind of get through all of the phase improvements, you've strung together a cohesive end-to-end journey that, again, is much more a seamless and frictionless for the customer. So that was one where we actually were able to have dedicated resources specific to the transformation. And that was very helpful for focus. I think one of the challenges that we had during that time was we were working in Agile, but like many, many companies, not everybody's fully agile. And in fact, I think most people, if you're a company of any tenure or any kind of longevity, you have legacy systems that are not agile and may never truly convert to an agile working process. And so the challenges that we had there was, how do you work in an agile way, but also kind of have to respect the fact that some things are waterfalls still in your business, and how do you merge those two? And in most businesses, when I come in, you have to end up kind of hybridizing between agile and waterfall, and, you know, teams that are working in agile, but then there are whole organizations that still work as a waterfall module. And then how do you kind of marry those two? Which is why I say textbook agile, great in theory, just like textbook digital transformation, great in theory. But it's all very specific to the company you're in and the environment that you have to get the work done in. And you're going to have to bend or you will break.
Yeah. Yeah. Specific and I'd say very much relevant. We often talk about digital transformation, put the focus on digital, and sometimes forget that digital is only the catalyst. Transformation is really the goal. And with that in mind, it's got to be relevant, and you've got to really talk about how do you move an organization from point A to point B. And that is why I called out the organization side of this, because obviously the work you had done in various industries, now you're hitting an industry where, especially when you think about IoT and the angle there, where technology is the business in that sense. And so you don't just stop at the customer touch points or the systems. You have to think about digitalization of sales, of the product itself, of moving to maybe even advanced models like as a service, right? All of those things come into play, or at least into consideration during, you know, a digital transformation. So now, of course, in what seems like a natural move, now that we've visited some of your past successes there, especially around both B2B and B2C, you joined Big Ass Fans as Chief Digital Information Officer. So tell us a little bit about the company, your role, and your impact.
So Big Ass Fans is a premium provider of comfort solutions. So they're known for really big ass fans that are comfort solutions, right? So the tagline right now is comfort without compromise. And they're based in Lexington, Kentucky. And they're about a $350 million company that's on the march to become a $1 billion company. And so that's really why they brought me in, was to kind of evaluate where are we at from a process and a technical stack and a customer experience perspective. Where are we? What do we need to go do so that we can gracefully scale to $1 billion? And so after kind of coming in, and I interviewed 58 people across different areas of the business and put some recommendations together based on that. And what's great about Big Ass Fans is the employees are very engaged and believe in the product and believe in their customers. But they were working with some, what I'll call outdated or more manual than they needed to be processes. They didn't have a really good integration layer where all of the systems talked to each other and showed data at the points of need. And in addition, they hadn't automated a lot of things that, coming from a larger organization, you would be like, well, why are you still doing that manually? That could have been automated, right? So looking at those opportunities so that in order to scale to $1 billion, you don't have to add headcount to do that. You can actually keep quasi the same amount of headcount, but you can get the efficiencies from automating things that human beings are doing that simply just aren't value add for the human being to be doing. And so we've really focused on going around and finding those things. And what we found is we needed to bring in some more platforms, or we needed to upgrade platforms that we had. So we're in the process right now of, we were using EDI, but it's what I call faux EDI, right? It wasn't 100% fully automated. So we're really putting a focus on fully automating EDI, which will pull off some manual things that people were having to do on the ordering side and the invoicing side. We're bringing in a new transportation management system. We're halfway through with that. We had a homegrown integration bus, but it had been kind of coded on top of and coded on top of and coded on top of, and there wasn't a lot of documentation from its time. And so it was very difficult to efficiently fix anything if it broke or make changes to it. So we've replaced that with MuleSoft, we had Salesforce Service Cloud, but we're going in and kind of revamping that, making sure that we have a few more required fields that we're automating tasks so that we have better data integrity. So again, when you start integrating the systems and you have better data integrity, you're better to automate things in a more efficient manner. So lots of different kind of balls in the air, but all with the goal that we want to get more efficient in an automated fashion so that we can scale gracefully to $1 billion.
Scale gracefully. That's a notable quotable. So perhaps let's go back a little bit and closing the loop, given your IoT starting point. What degree do you see IoT technologies catalyzing changes in traditional electrical appliance companies like big ass fans?
Yeah, so I think that in the industrial space, it's for sure comfort for your workforce equals productivity. And we have some statistics, which unfortunately I don't have memorized, but you know, the hotter you are, the slower you work. The cooler you are, the more efficiently you work. And so not only is it a productivity enhancer to make sure that your heating and cooling solutions are effective for your workforce, but it also is a morale and a human resources and a retention strategy as well, because nobody wants to go to work in 110 degree weather when it's 130 degrees in the factory, right? That becomes miserable really quickly, and morale will tank as a result. So interestingly, from a human resources, not just a productivity perspective, having the proper climate control is important. And so I think that when you get into having the infrastructure to do that and having multiple fans or multiple coolers or even heat, if you're in the winter, having that connected and being able to kind of monitor that and monitor it across all of your facilities, if you're located in multiple different buildings in one city or even in different cities. So I think that one area is just having that kind of building facilities overview to say, hey, all of my fans are working efficiently and effectively. I think there's also a preventative maintenance play, right, where you can monitor it to make sure it's performing well. And if it's not, then you know that you need to come in and kind of have it serviced. All of those types of things that we've seen in other industries. I mean, I come from telecom, right? And we had our network operations center that was constantly monitoring our switches and our towers to make sure that calls were happening and things weren't failing. It's that same kind of concept, but then brought into the appliance scenario. You even have somewhere in your home, like your refrigerators and things like that, where you can actually kind of see the efficiency of the refrigerator. Same with heating and cooling as well. So I think there's plays. It's going to be a degree of turning that corner on how serious people want to get about managing that infrastructure in their business and in their home. But I don't think anybody 20 years ago thought that we'd be looking at our fitness watches and monitoring our steps every single day and our heartbeat and all the other things that they monitor. So I think it's just, you know, the time is here and it'll be an evolution for it to kind of get to full scale.
Every business will eventually become a digital business. And even those traditional, if you will, utility or appliance, electrical businesses, right? And clearly, smart homes, smart factories, smart buildings, all of these things come to play for all components of that. So let me go back. You mentioned the organizational side. Knowing really your background and how you came in and knowing the, what I call really holistic extent of the digital transformation work you're undertaking now and you have in the past, how do you organize for such a widespread digital transformation, really involving all core functions from engineering and manufacturing to sales, marketing, and service?
Yeah, so it is different every single time because it really depends on the company and the company culture and the company structure and who's chomping at the bit for improvement and who's a little bit more resistant, because there's always those different groups in every single organization. But I think key to it is that you have to have a centralized lead. You have to have one person who's on point, who kind of knows the entire plan holistically, and that person has to have, I've seen it most effective when that person's on the business side, because IT cannot drive change by itself. So even if you sit, like in my role, I actually sit in IT, but because I have an extensive business background, I'm not your average IT person, right? I'm not coming at things specifically from boxes, interfaces. I come at things from business process and experience improvements. And so I think you have to have somebody who can amalgamate a large amount of information and look at it through the lens of the employee and the lens of the customer. And that's another thing that I truly believe is you cannot do a customer experience transformation and not do an employee experience transformation, because the employee experience is the customer experience. So if it sucks, your customer, it's going to show to your customers, right? And so many people like think that it's okay to have their employees scurrying around manually on hamster wheels doing things, but then having a slick app for their customers. It doesn't work like that, because garbage in, garbage out. And so you really have to tackle the customer experience and the employee experience simultaneously. And so I think once you have that kind of lead, having a list of problems that you're going to go tackle. I have found in every single role that when you start writing stuff down and making a list, and I don't care how you make the list, whether you write it in Excel or you put it in Jira, however you make your list, having that list and being able to communicate that list and then start knocking off some of the low-hanging fruit of that list, that starts to make people go, oh my gosh, they're serious this time. We've heard it 27 other times, but we didn't have a list before. And oh my gosh, something on the list got done. Okay, let's see if something else gets done. And eventually you start getting momentum on that. You know, I view it as my job is to solve problems, whether it's a customer problem, whether it's a business problem, whether it's an employee process problem, I'm there to solve problems. And so what I really like to do is when we need to tackle, okay, how does it work today and how do you want it to work tomorrow? I get cross-functional people in a room and we whiteboard our way through it and we debate the options. And it's just a more efficient way to get requirements, because if you're trying to do requirements over the phone, which I do that on some smaller things, it'll take a while, right? But getting people in the room, locking them down for a day or two to really just in-depth discuss the art of the possible and what tomorrow should look like. That's how I typically tend to engage a lot of different people from different departments, but around a singular topic that they all have some skin in the game on.
So I understand that you really kind of packaged your real world experience and launched a new company to inspire and help organizations better assess, prepare, and execute transformational change. Can you share how you help clients and really who would be your ideal clients?
Yes, I have. So as we kind of alluded to earlier, I've had a lot of varied experience with transformations in a lot of different companies of different sizes, in different industries. And I recently came off of a role and I was like, why do some of these transformations go off the rails and some of them don't? And I really started thinking about what are the elements that make a transformation successful. And 80% of companies say that they need to undertake a digital transformation or they're planning to undertake a digital transformation, but actually 70% report that they don't succeed. So only 30% succeeds. So how can you make sure that your company is in that 30% that succeeds? And so I really started thinking about what I've seen across my vast experience in this as the things that kind of differentiate the winners from the losers. So I've put that together in the clear, ready, and aligned framework. And underneath each of those pillars, there's 13 different competencies, which I won't go through here, but they are on my website if anybody wants to go take a look, which is KimberlyEubank.com. And it's 13 competencies that you really need to think about ahead of time, before you start doing work, before you start spending money. And then I typically use a framework of when I come into a client, it's, I want to interview. I want to hear from people. Like I'll talk to senior leadership about what they think is going on, but oftentimes what senior leaders think is going on and what's really going on are shades different, right? And so I want to talk to the people actually doing the work. So I do extensive interviews with the people on the ground, and I kind of compare and contrast that to what senior leadership has told me they believe the issues are. And then I put together a recommendation, an assessment that says, look, this is what your issues are. these are probably the things you need to go tackle. Here's what I recommend you tackle. I can do that in a priority order. I've even gotten down to where some clients, you know, I'll help them, you know, you need a new X system. I can help you evaluate X systems or put you in contact with X systems. The companies who probably need that help are people who have been in maintenance mode a long time. And it could be that you chose to invest in product. It could be that you're the big gorilla and you've just been successful by momentum, but your competitors have been investing in experience improvements and in digitization where you haven't been. And all of a sudden you wake up and your experience is lagging and your customers are starting to tell you that your experience is lagging. That's one use case. Scaling for growth, right? I'm a $250 million company that has aspirations of being a billion-dollar company, but we're still working like we're a $100 million company. How do I evolve that so that we start working like a billion-dollar company? Because you don't want to wait until you get there to break, right? And we all saw with, I think it was Southwest a couple Christmases ago, right? Where they had not invested in their systems, even though they knew they needed to, and they had been told that they needed to, they chose to put their money elsewhere, right? And then they got so much load that the systems that they had been relying on but hadn't been investing in, they cracked under the load. You don't want to wait for the load to hit you. You want to get ahead of the load. So if you're moving into new markets or new channels, that might be a time as well where you might want to assess how you get things done or to more better and efficiently define how you're going to go to market in that new channel. All of those are potential use cases where you might want to have somebody independent come in and do an assessment of your readiness for change.
It sounds like a very compelling, timely, and relevant offering that you have. And I'm sure given all the conversations we've had across all of our podcasts around digital transformation, it's one that I think will be in great demand. So perhaps you've got to figure out how to take a KimberlyEubank.com and go for Kim in a box, because that's about what it's going to take given the scale, I'm sure. As we wrap up, I'm always curious to know how you maintain your edge as a leader, particularly in digital transformation. Any recommendations you'd like to highlight for our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, it is hard because when you're doing a digital transformation, your head's down. If you're doing it right, your head's down and you're busy every minute of the day. So staying kind of ahead of trends and knowing what's going on in the industry, what I found lately that works for me is I've actually set up a Google alert with the word transformation in it. And so every day I get a Google alert where people have mentioned transformation. Now, sometimes I get body transformations because the word is used not just for digital transformation, but I scan through those articles. And if one kind of interests me, then I'll open it up and take a quick read of it. So that seems to be something where some days I don't read anything. Some days I'll read just something short and quick. And they tend to be shorter. So it's not like you're having to invest, you know, an hour of time to get through something that's really, you know, meaty and in depth. I'll tell you from a book perspective, someone gave me recently the book Smart Brevity. And that book is really about how you communicate in the digital age and how it's really about getting to the point, right? And how you should formulate your communications to employees, to whomever, to make sure that you're hitting the salient points, the important points without a lot of fluff, but making sure that you get your full message across. And so in a world where we've all got full inboxes, the ones that are short, sweet, and to the point, I appreciate those. And so that book is one that kind of, if you struggle with being short and direct and to the point, then that book is a helper. And it's Smart Brevity. And then there's a couple of old books that really hit me when I read them years ago and stuck with me. And I'm not even sure if they're in print anymore, but one is called Work to Live by Joe Robinson. And that book was all about how the American work culture is we work, 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 but that doesn't necessarily make us more efficient. And how other companies that have great GDPs and productivity, they take a little bit more time to rest and relax and rejuvenate. And it was really an eye opener for me that was like, you know what? I should really take my vacations. because there was a point in my late 20s where if work called, I answered. And I really didn't take the necessary time to unplug. And, you know, look, I still will check an email here or there on vacation, but I'm much better about unplugging. And so I think work to live was helpful for that, because you can't keep going at the speed that you need to go in a transformation indefinitely. You will hit a wall at some point. And then another one from a female leadership perspective is It's Not a Glass Ceiling, It's a Sticky Floor by Rebecca Shambaugh. And that's really a book about how women do certain things that actually we may be our own enemy in us, in things, because of the way we approach a situation or handle a situation. And so we might be inadvertently sabotaging career success by doing those things. And so I read that again, probably in my early 30s. And that was one that when I cleaned out my library during COVID, those three books stayed.
Great recommendations. And I love the title of the third one. That's very compelling. So, well, Kimberly, thank you for sharing this time and these wonderful insights with us today.
Well, thank you so much for asking. I appreciate it. And I appreciate your thoughts around IoT and the digital transformation space as well. So I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. And thank you for contributing to podcast. So this has been Kimberly Eubank, Chief Digital Information Officer at Big Ass Fans. And for more information on her new offering and service, it's KimberlyEubank.com. And we should have a link in the podcast release when we go out with it. So thank you for listening. And please join us for the next episode of our Digital Thread podcast series. We wish you an impactful day. You've been listening to the Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. We hope you've enjoyed the discussion. And as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Please check our website at momenta.one for archived versions of podcasts, as well as resources to help with your digital industry journey. Thank you for listening.